The only suspect to go to trial following the well-publicized beating of two gay men in Center City, Philadelphia in 2014 will go to jail for from 5 to 10 months. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. WHYY's Bobby Allen reports that the emotional hearing brings a close to a case that's been grabbing national headlines.
Andrew Hout, who suffered a broken jaw in the attack, told the judge that it wasn't the hateful slurs that have stayed with him, but how the whole group left him in a pool of blood in an alleyway. It's something Assistant District Attorney Mike Berry emphasized, too. He says it shows how callous the group was.
All 15 of them, every single one of them, they went to Tiernanog. They went and had a beer after this. And in fact, video that was shown at the trial shows them walking away, talking, laughing, hanging out as if nothing had happened at all.
Judge Roxanne Covington said during the trial, she wondered how she'd feel if the victims were her friends. This type of behavior, she said, is a, quote, violation of human rights and needs to trigger serious punishment. Catherine Knott will be incarcerated for 5 to 10 months, then be on probation for 2 years. She also was fined $2,000 and is required to take anger management classes. Berry says the case has hurt Philadelphia's image.
It did irreparable damage to the city's reputation. You know, people throughout the country probably may not even know that Ms. Knott wasn't from Philadelphia and was just visiting. All they hear is that, you know, two men were viciously beaten because they're a gay in Philadelphia.
When the judge started reading the sentence, Knott started to cry hysterically. Her mom ran up to try to hug her, but was stopped by sheriff's deputies. The two hugged over a divider before Knott was taken immediately into custody. Neither Knott's parents nor her attorney had any comments. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Today, Philadelphia City Council President Darrell Clark made good on an Inauguration Day promise, announcing a program he says will create up to 10,000 so-called green jobs. Here to break it down for us is WHYY's Katie Culinary. And Katie, how is Clark proposing to create these 10,000 jobs?
Well, Clark is proposing a large-scale energy efficiency, or ESCO, project that'll employ all those thousands of people. And we'll get to those jobs numbers in a moment. But first, I need to explain exactly what an ESCO project is. So ESCO stands for Energy Services Company, and here's how their business model works. Let's say you own a building.
I own a building.
Oh, do you? Good. Well, so an ESCO comes in and does an audit of your building to see if maybe your boiler or your windows could be replaced with more energy-efficient ones. Then you sign an agreement with that ESCO guaranteeing that what you'll save on your energy bills every month as a result of putting in that new boiler will be less than the monthly payments you'll make for the cost of installing that new boiler. These kinds of projects have had success on the municipal level with city-owned buildings and school district facilities around the country. What Clark wants to do is expand on that into some uncharted territory, that is low-income housing and small businesses like restaurants, sectors that haven't typically been targets for ESCO projects before.
So back to those 10,000 green jobs, where are they going to come from?
So some of those jobs will be what are called direct jobs, people who will actually be employed doing the energy audits, people who will install the new energy efficient appliances, and others will be indirect jobs, the jobs that will come from people saving money and going out and spending that cash. And what makes them green? Well, that's because they're dealing in saving energy, and that's considered good for the environment and helping to fight climate change.
Is there any real notion yet of how the city's going to finance all this?
Well, that's a really good question, Dave, and it's not one that Clark was able to answer for members of the press today.
The devil is in the details, and we are currently working with the devil to get the details of some of those programs.
The Philadelphia Energy Authority says the city will need to invest $1 billion in public and private money to this project. But how much city money and where it'll come from just isn't clear right now. Maybe we'll get some clarity on that when Philadelphia starts its budget process.
WHYY's Katie Culinary on NewsWorks Tonight. The Philadelphia School Reform Commission faces questions about whether it acted illegally during its January meeting. As WHYY's Kevin McCory reports, critics allege the body violated Pennsylvania's transparency laws.
Late into January's 5-hour School Reform Commission meeting, Commissioner Sylvia Sims advanced a surprise motion before Chair Marge Neff.
So any further questions or comments?
Yes.
Commissioner Sims?
I have a motion on the floor. My heart is heavy, and I have pent-up emotions about the way the district has allowed many of our schools and low-income neighborhoods to fail our students and their families.
The text of the resolution was not given to the public beforehand, and the body did not invite public comment on that specific resolution before a vote was taken.
All right, Mr. Davis, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Sims's resolution, which immediately passed, resuscitated the idea of converting Germantown's Worcester Elementary into a charter school by inviting a full application from Mastery Charter. Superintendent William Height had pitched converting Worcester in October, but rescinded his recommendation in early January, based on improving test scores. Those who opposed the conversion felt blindsided by the SRC's action. Many who otherwise would have come to that meeting to testify against it say they stayed home because they were assured by the superintendent that conversion was no longer a possibility.
Stop, wait till the bus stops. All right, have a good day.
Kenya Nation Holmes has two sons attending Worcester.
I do wish I was there so when she stood up and said what she had to say, I could have interrupted her and said, how dare you?
Pennsylvania's Sunshine Act does not require governmental agencies to publish resolution agendas prior to meetings. The SRC typically does so anyway, weeks in advance. But the Sunshine Law does mandate that the public needs a chance to weigh in on an action before a vote. Philadelphia City Council President Darrell Clark says that didn't happen in this case.
I believe that is clearly a violation of the Sunshine Act, both in terms of law and in the spirit of the law.
To Clark, the move is more evidence that the unelected state-controlled body should be dissolved. But criticism does not end with Clark. Mayor Jim Kenney said he was shocked by the board's course of action, and newly elected Councilwoman Helen Gimm believes there should be a formal investigation. School District General Counsel Michael Davis disagrees. He argues that the SRC got plenty of public input on the idea, even if it came before the formal resolution was authored.
There was abundant public comment from parents on both sides of that issue for weeks, maybe months before the meeting.
That argument falls on deaf ears to parents like Holmes, who feel misdirected and railroaded by a move they say sets a worrisome precedent.
Just because it's been on the table, it doesn't make it so. An idea is just that, an idea. You still need a resolution. You still need something written down on paper. You still need to be official. Take the proper steps. And that's what I mean. They change the rules as they go along because they make them up. How can I keep up with your rules? Is every time you change them to fit your ideas.
Much of the criticism for the SRC in this case comes from those who tend to oppose expanding charter schools. But even outside neutral observers question the SRC's action and the district's legal justification. The state's Office of Open Records is headed by Eric Arneson, a former top Republican legislative aide.
That may very well be a winning legal argument. Legally, it may very well be correct. As a matter of best practice, if somebody had come to us in advance and said, here's the issue, what do you recommend, we certainly would have recommended a more robust process.
Arneson agrees with critics who say that actions like these undermine the public's trust in the integrity of the governmental process.
It's easy to understand the frustration. I can't imagine that anybody doesn't understand the frustration.
School Reform Commissioner Bill Green, who voted in favor of the resolution, almost concedes Arneson's point that the public should have been given a chance to comment before the vote.
In hindsight, maybe we should have done that, but the previous three meetings, people have commented on this exact issue, including some people commenting on it that night. I'm not sure we would have learned anything or it was necessary. But in hindsight, I would say perhaps it would be better to do that.
Green and other SRC members emphasize that this action merely invites a full application from Mastery. The final vote won't occur until April, giving the public plenty more chances to weigh in. Kevin McCrory, WHYY News.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away.
Turning to this evening's headlines, winter storm and coastal flood warnings have been issued for the state of Delaware as a winter storm bears down on the Mid-Atlantic. The storm warning takes effect at midnight tonight and continues until 6 Wednesday morning. The region is expected to get a total of about 4 to 8 inches of snow. Buffalo Bills running back LeSean McCoy is under investigation over the alleged assault of two off-duty police officers at a Philadelphia nightclub. Police say a fight broke out early yesterday over a bottle of champagne. A person familiar with the investigation confirms that LeSean McCoy, who played six seasons for the Eagles, is one of four men under investigation. Delaware Governor Jack Markell has tapped a retired Superior Court judge to fill a vacancy on Delaware's Court of Chancery. Markell said today he's nominating Joseph Slights III to become a vice chancellor, following the retirement later this month of Vice Chancellor John Noble. 40 degrees at 6:16, a winter storm watch in effect starting around midnight until late tomorrow night. Snow beginning overnight, off and on throughout the day tomorrow. We're looking at an accumulation of 2 to 4 inches in Philadelphia. Tomorrow's high, 36 degrees. You're listening to NewsWorks Tonight on WHYY. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. Let's pause now for some music. Here's the late guitarist Michael Hedges with Aerial Boundaries. Michael Hedges with the title track to his album, Aerial Boundaries. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on Pledge Free YStream.
Frederick Living supports WHYY. Frederick Living, a continuing care retirement community nestled in the beautiful countryside of Montgomery County, is proud to announce the expansion of their campus. The meadows at Frederick Living will consist of 55 cottages clustered in an innovative design based on the pocket neighborhood concept. Frederick Living is now taking reservations. Details about scheduling a visit at 610-754-7878. That's 610-754-7878. Frederick Living. Live well.
Penn Museum supports WHYY. What was behind the legendary story of King Midas and his golden touch? On Saturday, February 13th, Penn Museum opens its world premiere exhibition, The Golden Age of King Midas, with a day-long public celebration. A Turkish-inspired oasis built just for the opening. Traditional music. A fashion show of ancient costumes from Turkey. Talks by archaeologists and family crafts are part of the day. Details at penn.museum.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Well, perhaps it's an early indication that we can look past the winter season. Tomorrow is Shrove Tuesday. Let's mark up the calendar with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. So, Derek, happy penultimate Mardi Gras day.
And in fact, what Shrove Tuesday is meant to be is the last day before the Lenten season, and you're supposed to fast after that. Lent lasts until just before Easter.
Again, all predicated on the lunar calendar.
Yes, that's the whole thing, because what we're actually leading up to here, of course, is Easter. Because we peg Easter Sunday as the first Sunday after the first full moon after the vernal equinox. So in this case, what we're looking at is Sunday, March 28th, as being Easter.
Derek, let's turn next to a couple of discoveries in the category of, well, let's call it astronomical oddities, starting with something that's very powerful, very bright, and very small.
One of the things I love about astronomy, Dave, is that there is an incredible number of odd objects in the universe. And the thing that you're referring to is this very, very odd object that astronomers observed just about a year ago and originally thought that it might be a supernova. But upon closer examination, it seemed to be one of the strangest supernovas they'd ever seen. This object is more than 200 times more powerful than an average supernova. It's 570 billion times brighter than our sun, 20 times brighter than all of the stars in our galaxy put together, and it's only 10 miles across. They could not imagine what could possibly create such incredible force in such a small spot, except for one very slim possibility. And this slim possibility is an object that sometimes is created out of very, very intense supernova explosions called a magnetar. Now, a magnetar is an object that's very similar to another type of star that most of us know about called a pulsar. This is a star that's composed of nothing but neutrons but spins at a very, very high rate, perhaps 300, 400, 500, maybe even 800 times per second. But here what astronomers are observing, an object that they've now been able to determine is 3.8 billion light years away, but that spins 1,000 times a second. It's very, very gradually slowing down. It'll take hundreds of millions of years to eventually stop spinning, but as it slows down, it's releasing tremendous amounts of energy. Now, those tremendous amounts of energy being coupled with the material that was blown off of the supernova itself is what's generating this immense amount of power that allows this object to be seen so brightly over such an incredible distance of 3.8 billion miles.
From very, very bright to, by definition, very, very dark, a black hole. And who knew a black hole could ever run out of the good stuff and nutrition that gives it sustenance?
One of the things that we've always thought is that black holes would eventually turn themselves off somehow. But we've never been able to see this mechanism, nor see a black hole actually shut itself off. We thought, though, that it would take an incredibly long time for that to happen. But what some astronomers have been able to do is to actually identify a black hole as it is shutting itself down because it has run out of energy supply. And that's really an amazing thing to see, especially considering that it has happened over such a short period of time. So rather than it being thousands of years, or maybe even millions of years, astronomers have been able to see a black hole actually turn itself off over a period of just about 7 years.
Astonishing. By contrast, can that toggle switch ever go back on?
Well, that's a really great question. Looking at the mechanism that they see for how it turned itself off, these astronomers are also thinking that if there just happened to be some object, a star nearby, that could provide the material needed to restart the black hole again. They now call these things changing-look quasars.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, time up with outer space, ways incorporated.
Finally this evening, watching the Denver Broncos handle the Carolina Panthers in the Super Bowl yesterday, few football fans were likely thinking about the Eagles, who failed to make the playoffs and fired head coach Chip Kelly before the final game of the year. Well, now that the season is over and new Eagles coach Doug Peterson is in place, the team is setting its sights on next season. And to that end, the Eagles released veteran wide receiver Riley Cooper today. Cooper, you may recall, made headlines in 2013 after a video surfaced of him shouting a racial slur at a concert. Though it was ultimately Coop's lackluster play that got him the boot, he had just 21 receptions for 327 yards this season. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. With social media taking on a greater and greater role in business, the lines between public domain and proprietary information are blurring. We'll look into who owns social media content on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
Supporting WHYY, the Cooper Heart Institute provides comprehensive, adult-focused cardiovascular programs that include non-invasive, minimally invasive, surgical diagnostic, and therapeutic options by a team of dedicated cardiologists. The Cooper Heart Institute delivers access to advanced technologies in an academic treatment setting at convenient locations throughout South Jersey. For a consultation, cooperhealth.org/heart or 800-8-COOPER.
Here's some facts about the New Hampshire primary. It turns 100 years old this year.
There's a law that requires it to be the first primary in the nation.
Richard Nixon holds the record for the most New Hampshire primaries won.
Okay, that's three.
So what news will be made this year? I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Join us tomorrow for live coverage of the New Hampshire primary from NPR News.
Coverage begins tomorrow night at 8 on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. A virtuoso with chops that defy comparison, says the New York Times of Yefim Bronfman. Bronfman joins the Philadelphia Orchestra and conductor Vladimir Yurovsky for Beethoven's Emperor Concerto on Valentine's weekend. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or online. This Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Valentine's weekend at the Kimmel Center. Beethoven's Emperor Concerto with the Philadelphia Orchestra.